I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, a long list of bad bills bites the dust in Olympia, thanks in part to a Democratic state senator who stood his ground against his own party. Also, how the CCA and another controversial proposal will hurt school funding in Washington state. And we'll have a conversation about why you have to declare your preferred party on the outside of your presidential primary ballot. State Representative Jim Walsh will join us. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Dun, dun, dun. Another one bites the dust. Dun, dun. I don't know any lyrics after that. Another one bites the dust, and another one's done. Something like that. Welcome to Undivided. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I was doing my happy dance yesterday. News left and right of bad bills in Olympia biting the dust, as we said. And also, today is an exciting day because the hearing, as we speak in Olympia, right now, they are gearing up to have this first hearing on one of three initiatives that are getting hearings this week. The hearing happening at 12:30 p.m. in Olympia in House Hearing Room A, in case you're frantically scrambling to try to get down there and get a space, has to do with Initiative 2111, No State Income Tax. You might be asking yourself, well, we already have our constitution that says that you can't have a graduated income tax in the state of Washington. Why do we need an initiative like this? Well, it's because we have seen efforts at the county level, city level, and in Olympia to try to test that. I mean, they pushed through an illegal tax on capital gains, which is an income tax. So they want an income tax. In fact, I tend to believe that one of the reasons why they're making life so miserably expensive for working class people is so everyone throws their hands up and they just say, okay, we've had enough. Just give us an income tax and get rid of all these other things. So that's happening. I just want to note, we are getting frequent updates about the sign-in, because I encouraged you guys yesterday to register either pro or con, however you feel. I'm not going to tell you what to think, for these initiatives heading into the hearings. Because when you have a committee hearing, that committee will know how many people have signed up opposed to what they're discussing and how many people have signed up in support of what they're discussing. Now, remember, even though this is a no income tax initiative, if you support the initiative, you should still sign in as pro. I had a question about this. Leslie said, I'm not 100% sure I'm voting the way I want to with the wording of the three measures. I don't want a state income tax. I am for more police. Parental rights are paramount to me. The government has no business in my business with my kids. So that's three cons, she asks. And I included that question because I imagine that's a common confusion. If you support the initiatives, you need to register pro. If you're opposed to the initiatives, then you're con. But as of this morning, for the initiative on the income tax, which is being heard 25 minutes from now, 5,286 people have signed in favor of that initiative. That's pretty remarkable. 5,286. You know how many have signed in opposed? 601. So the yeas have it by
it's
far.
All Brian Haywood.
Yes, and the committee members will see that. 89.6% of the people who registered ahead of the committee, obviously not all of them are going to testify. There'll just be a handful who are allowed to testify. 89.6% are in favor of this initiative. And I can already tell you that we're seeing similar numbers for the initiatives that are getting hearings tomorrow. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this today. Obviously, we'll recap the hearing that happens on the show tomorrow. But there is still time to register your position. I've put the links out all over social media. So it should be pretty easy to find. And just because you register your position doesn't mean that you have to actually go in person or even testify. You can just say, here's how I feel about it, FYI, which I think is great. Okay, yesterday afternoon, I started seeing a lot of angry tweets come out from Democratic lawmakers, and I'm like, wow, something nice must be happening. I saw Democratic lawmakers in particular angry about what happened in the Senate Ways and Means Committee with their rent control proposal, which we'll get to momentarily. But so Senate Ways and Means Committee had a hearing yesterday, and they had a laundry list of bills to go through in this hearing. At one point, the two sides emerge into their caucus room. So behind closed doors, they take a break and they go into caucus and sort of discuss where they're at with the bills that are before the committee. So Dems go into their caucus room behind closed doors. They emerge a short while later looking quite perturbed. And here's what the committee chair said.
Calling us back into executive session. Before we begin, we will not be taking action on 1579, 2114, 2065, and 1932.
Not be taking action, meaning they did not have the support to take a vote in committee. They did not have the Democratic support. So what are those bills? Let's go through a list of Democrat-backed proposals. I am opposed to every single one of them. We've talked about every single one of them on the show that failed in this committee. Thanks, I want to give a lot of credit to State Senator Mark Mullett, who's of course running for governor, but he's a moderate Democrat. And I've heard from behind the scenes that Democrats are pissed at him. But he stood his ground on all of these. He's on Ways and Means, and they simply did not have the votes without his support, and I believe Senator Van de Wedge, to push these bills through. So what died? Substitute House Bill 2114, which would have instituted rent control across Washington state. It would have been disastrous for landlords, and it would have been disastrous for affordability in the state of Washington. That failed to make it through committee. Also, great, great moment for law enforcement, a bill that would have made it easier for Attorney General Bob Ferguson to continue to politically prosecute police officers, has failed. House Bill 1579 would have set up independent prosecutions of police in the hands of the Attorney General's office. That has failed. That is a win for public safety and for everyone who wants us to be able to someday recoup the number of police officers we have lost in the state of Washington. Also, a Tara Simmons-esque bill, House Bill 2065, which would have said that if you commit violent crimes as a juvenile, those crimes are not going to follow you into adulthood. When you continue to commit more violent crimes, you essentially get your points wiped clean, which means when you go on as an adult to continue to commit violent crimes, all of those points you should have accumulated from the same types of violent crimes before you turned 18, they would have been nowhere to be seen and a judge couldn't have considered them. So House Bill 2065 failed to make it out of committee. Also, House Bill 1932, which would have moved all elections to even years, has failed to get it out of that committee. And that is a bill that was supported by Democrats, and they wouldn't do anything election related unless they believed that it would be advantageous for them. They wanted no off-year elections, everything to be on even year ballots. They failed. So House Bill 1932, dead. Now, I saw a lot of angst among Democrats about all of those. And I know, like I said, there was some angst directed at Democratic State Senator Mark Mullett. But perhaps none was more angering to the Democratic majority than the failure of the rent control proposal. Nicole McCree, whose proposal, she was one of the people who supported that proposal, she put out a statement. It was actually an Emily Alvarado bill, but Nicole McCree put out a statement about its failure, saying, "I'm incredibly disappointed that it appears rent stabilization will not become law this year. Renters and manufactured homeowners in our state have demanded relief after years of excessive and unfair rental increases. We have heard countless stories of seniors, students, families, and people with disabilities struggling to keep up with rent. Moving forward, I won't stop until we have stable rents in the state, because that is what the working families of Washington deserve." And of course, no acknowledgement from Democrats. And this is something that Mark Mullett understood perfectly well, that if you put a cap at 7% per year for landlords, can't raise rents more than 7% in any given year, they will raise rent 7% every year. because they don't know what is coming down the road. So if you put that limit on them, it's going to hurt renters more. It's also going to reduce the availability of housing options. How many landlords in Seattle and now Tacoma are we seeing sell their units that are completely out of the rental market because of the strict landlord rules and tenant protections that have made it not profitable to be a landlord? And I'm sorry, this is a business. People don't buy rental and investment properties and then lease them out to people out of the goodness of their heart. I mean, I don't think that they're making money hand over the over fist for these small mom and pop landlords. So you know what? The only ones when you pass policies like this that are going to be left are those big, scary landlords that they say are taking advantage of tenants. So this was a completely backward policy that was not going to fix the problem that they were solving for. And it appears it is dead for this legislative session. And as I've said before, you can always find, you know, they could yank it from committee and throw it to the floor. I don't think that they're going to do that with this one. It does appear that it has reached the end of the line. However, we'll see it again next session. I'm pretty sure of that. That's why we need a Governor Dave Reichert, because if they bring something like this up next session, the veto pen will be pulled out quite quickly. All right. I want to get to an issue that you guys have been emailing us about nonstop. So after today, stop emailing me about it. No, I'm just kidding. So you probably got your presidential primary ballot in the mail. I've got mine here, but we'll show you a closer look up at the outside of the envelope that you would need to return if you choose to vote in Washington's presidential primary. And one of the things that a lot of you have noticed is that you have to mark your party declaration on the outside of the envelope, Democratic Party or Republican Party. And that, I think, for many reasons, has raised alarm bells. Definitely feels like kind of a violation of privacy. And then for some people, they don't want to have to declare a party. I mean, I know I don't want to have to declare a party. I don't want weird party junk mail coming to me to be able to choose who I think would be best for the presidency of the options available to me. And this got, I mean, this has been an issue, I'll say, and we'll get to this coming up momentarily. This is not the first time we've had this, but I think it's getting renewed attention because Elon Musk commented on it. And so whenever Elon Musk comments on something, it gets a lot of attention. So there were some folks outside of Washington State who aren't familiar with the way our presidential primaries work, who had been sharing pictures of people asking, like, why do I have to do this on my ballot? And Elon Musk responded, what? I mean, that is a, I can understand that sentiment, being very confused. So Elon Musk weighing in on it led to national news talking about it. Jim Walsh, the chair of the Washington State Republican Party, also a state representative, was on Fox News. The headline from Fox, Washington GOP chair calls declaring party on outside of ballot, quote, questionable design as voters raise concerns. So we asked Jim Walsh to come on the show with us today to talk about not only some of the things he has tried to do over the last few years in the legislature to rectify this exact situation, but to talk about some of the concerns that he's heard as a state lawmaker from his constituents. Representative Walsh, welcome to Undivided.
Oh, Brandy, it's good to see you again.
Well,
you're doing great work, and we're all busy here at the Capitol.
Yeah, I imagine. Hearing today, that should be exciting.
Yeah, the first of the three initiatives that have hearings has its hearing this afternoon. That's initiative 2111, the one that basically puts into law the tradition of Washington that we don't have a personal income tax in this state.
Yeah, I'm excited. For us, this is like Super Bowl Sunday for us political nerds, right? Woo! That's
exactly right.
Yeah.
A narrow but deep slice of the general population.
Exactly. Yeah. Before I get into you getting Elon Musk's attention on something, I just want to thank you. You gave Nicole a tour of the Capitol when we were down there on Friday. I felt like Nicole had never been, and you were the perfect person to do it because you're just all the history and pointing things out. So thank you for doing that.
Oh, no worries. It's always good to double check and make sure that my pass card is still working. Sometimes it's not.
Yeah, it was this time. Okay, so I got my ballot here. I will be honest, in 2020, I was in the mainstream news, and I think I chose not to participate in the presidential primary because of the party declaration aspect of it. So is this the first time that the declaration has been on the outside?
No, it's not, Brandy.
So.
It's the second time. We changed the state law on the presidential primary in 2019. That was the last time we updated the, now we're getting photobombed. That was the last time that we updated the statute that controls the presidential primary. And so it had effect in 2020, and of course it's in effect now for 2024. The presidential primary is not like any other election. It's run under a totally different section of state law, under a totally different set of rules. And so in 2019, there was the last update to the law that affects presidential primaries. That's when the current language on the declaration, having to declare an affiliation with one party or the other, was there already, but it was updated and changed a bit. And we were against it. I was against that and actually spoke out against that in 2019. We didn't think that having to declare a party affiliation was necessary or a good thing. Washington voters are independent-minded. I would say they're fiercely independent-minded. And they really, I mean, I've heard from so many people, as I'm sure you have, who are unhappy about having to declare a party affiliation. Of course, we don't register by party in this state, as they do in many states. We are really a free-thinking, independent state, and people don't like having to check one of those boxes to vote in a presidential primary. But we were outvoted in 2019. The majority likes this system. Then in 2021, my colleague Skylar Rood and I worked on a bill that would have added a third option, would have said you could check unaffiliated. And if you did that, you could vote for whoever you wanted to on the presidential list in either party or any party. That bill also didn't get to the governor's desk. The majority party here in Olympia really likes the setup as it is. And I should say the last piece, Brandy, is while the state law requires the declaration of an affiliation to a party for just that one day, just that one election, the state law does not require that the form to check the box be on the outside of the envelope. And that's the other thing people are complaining about. That is a bureaucratic rule. That's an agency decision that the state secretary of state, working in conjunction with county auditors, the people who are usually in charge of local elections, has come up with. And we've asked them to do something else, put a flap over it, put it on the inside of the envelope. And they've basically told us this is the way they like it, because it's easier for them to process when the declaration's on the outside of the envelope. Of course, I think that's a major invasion of voters' privacy, and that we ought to find another way, if the box must be checked, to do it. But as the current setup here in Olympia is, this is how it is. So my recommendation to people has been, do it. Because you have to check the box to have your vote count in the primary, but don't put it in the mail. My advice is put it in a ballot box or take it to your county auditor.
Yeah, and I have to agree. I even don't like even having to put my phone number or an email on the outside of it. Like, maybe that's the job I do, where I'm like, I don't want some weirdo seeing it and calling me. And so did they explain to you why it's easier for them to have that declaration on the outside?
It's a mechanical explanation. I'm not sure I buy it completely, but they say that they can process the ballots faster and more accurately if they can sort it quickly before opening the envelope. I think it wouldn't hurt anybody if they had to open the envelope or at least open a flap covering the declaration before they decide how to process the rest of the ballot. But I do want to emphasize the presidential primary election is unlike any other election. You don't have to do this declaration in a general election, in any other kind of election here. And also, this declaration doesn't affect anything that you might vote in the future. You're not bound to it in the state primary. You're not bound to it in a general. It really is a one-off kind of election. And I think that's some of the reason our reforms have had trouble is a lot of people here at the Capitol say, well, look, it's a one-off type deal. It really doesn't matter that much. Why are you so upset about this? And, you know, to me, it's a principle thing. I think people are independent. They shouldn't have to check a box.
Yeah. Last question for you. I think my hesitancy and why I haven't filled mine out yet, I know who I want to vote for, but I don't want to check a box because I don't want to end up on some party's list of getting all sorts of things. So if I check one of these boxes, am I all of a sudden going to be inundated with asks for money and party related crap?
Short answer, yes, you are more likely to be inundated with that.
Okay.
It is a public document. The Secretary of State makes the total list, the database of who checked what box, available, not just to the parties, but to the general public for a window of time. It's a 60-day window of time after the presidential primary. So yeah, it is a privacy issue because it's not just the parties. Anybody who asks can get the lists of who checked which box in the presidential primary vote. And I think that does make people less inclined to participate, Randy.
Yeah.
Less inclined to vote.
Yep. I dislike it. I dislike it for many reasons. Jim Walsh, I know you have a lot of business to do. We will sit and watch the hearing with glee. So enjoy, sir.
Yes. A lot going on. We'll get those hearings done. And I hope that the initiatives that do get hearings are going to get votes out of the legislature. I've spoken with some of the state Senate leaders. They seem inclined to do it. And then it'll come down to the state House, whether the House takes up the vote or not. And that's just going to be interesting to see in the next week or so.
Well, let's hope so. There were a lot of wins, I think, for common sense this week. And I think that'd be a nice way to cap off the legislative session, to have the voters get a few wins as well. And if that was Rep. Brian Sandlin who photobombed our interview, you tell him hello.
You recognize Sandlin. Yes, it was.
Well, I just saw him briefly. It was a fleeting moment, but I'll recognize that face anywhere. All right, Jim Walsh, thank you.
Good to see you. Talk soon.
Yeah, we appreciate Jim Walsh's expertise on this. And so again, it's not new. You might just not recall this being a thing in 2020. And I think it is natural for it to get renewed attention. And especially given, you know, Republicans in particular have a distrust of our election system. I'm not saying all of them, but there is a distaste for mail-in voting, which I like mail-in voting. I like the convenience of it. But I also do understand the chain of custody issue where you're like putting it in a USPS box or a ballot drop box. You have all these people who are going to touch your ballot before it gets to where it's going. So I do understand that. And I don't think things like this help that build that trust very much when you already feel like you're being treated differently because you're a Republican and then somebody's going to get your ballot and say a big check on the Republican thing. But you can track your ballot. So please do remember that. We have a tracking system that has become much better over the years where you can track it, make sure it was counted, etc. And so I would definitely encourage you to do that. And also remember that this is not for every election, as Jim said. So for the primary election this summer, when you're going to vote, for instance, on who you prefer for governor, it's not divided by party like this. So it's just for the presidential primary in Washington. But I hope you got your questions answered there. And Elon Musk, I know you were watching. And so I did tag you in this because you were curious about our ballots. So just so you know, I hope you got a lot of useful information, Elon. All right, before we get to some really startling numbers about how much the Climate Commitment Act is costing our local school districts, even more than I ever anticipated, and an angle of that story that just has not been covered very much in the mainstream media. I was talking to our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital on Thursday about what can we look to? If we can't, it's so hard to trust the media on, oh, is the economy doing good or is it not doing good? Or it's so hard to trust Biden on, he thinks he's created the best economy that's ever been in the United States. And so traditionally something that you can trust are leading economic indicators that come out. But even with those, as Zach and I were talking about, the same numbers will come out and the media will interpret them in such different ways. Business Insider says a trusted indicator is fueling recession warnings. What you should know about the leading economic index. And then this is from Reuters. Leading economic index no longer signals U.S. recession.
Business Insider versus Reuters. Reuters, they threw some junior recent graduate with a journalist degree on that story. Nothing goes in a straight line, right? So even we look at stock markets or even unemployment numbers, you know, when you look at it, it's not consistent. You know, you get this and you get this. So what we look for is trend changes, right? Meaning if I see the line going down like this for unemployment and all of a sudden you get a hot jobs report and it busts up above that line, that's something to pay attention to. We all know who the general media wants to win this year, right?
Yeah.
So I think you're going to see more of that extrapolation. But no, it's all nonsense. If you look at the leading economic indicators, they are pointing recessionary.
Yeah, they're pointing recessionary. So it's very, very important to be managing your risk. You only get one retirement. You've worked really hard for it. Do not leave it up to the fluctuating markets, especially right now, election year, global unrest, all of these things. You need to be actively managing your portfolio. I recommend having a free Know Your Risk portfolio review with Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital. Zach also, by the way, hosts the Know Your Risk Radio podcast, if you want to check that out at knowyourriskradio.com. Their risk portfolio review is a great way just to see if you are overexposed to risk. There is no obligation. In fact, Bulwark doesn't even let you invest with them at their first meeting. So schedule your free risk review now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. We hear Democrats talk a lot about education funding. But I am starting to really question how much they actually care about funding our schools if they support the Climate Commitment Act and if they support a bill under consideration in Olympia right now that would give unemployment benefits to striking workers. Because both the CCA and that controversial bill in Olympia are both going to take money, suck money out of our public school system that should be going to help our kids get a better education. So let's talk about the CCA. And this is something that the Washington Senate Republican Caucus has put out because they were clued in. They heard from a local school district that said, hey, have you seen basically what our bills for powering our schools, how much they've gone up under the CCA? And so one school provided this to their state lawmaker in their district, and Republicans were so shocked by it, they are now asking every school district in the state to provide them with the costs for powering their schools because their utility bills have gone through the roof, and so they want to get a better idea of it. So this is from the Washington Senate Republicans. Schools are telling us how much the cap and tax charges from Olympia Democrats are costing you, the taxpayer. One single high school's bill shows almost $2,000 extra dollars for 3 weeks of their utilities. $2,000 extra dollars for 3 weeks due to the WAW Climate Act fee. They said also in Eastern Washington school districts, February 24th gas bill alone is $70,000 higher than in February of last year. All of that while natural gas prices have been decreasing. Their power company itemized the charge. It says on the west side of Washington, some power companies do not itemize the charge, as you know, because the Attorney General's office advised PSC against it. So it says the Washington Senate Democrats, they're going to figure out from all these school districts how much their utility bills have gone up. But again, that Eastern Washington School District utility bill, $70,000 more than it was this time last year. And Washougal High School's utility bill, this is just for 3 weeks. The itemized Washington Climate Act fee, $2,282.13. So if Democrats want to complain about, oh, our schools don't have enough money, look what your Climate Commitment Act is doing to schools. $70,000 for a district year over year, and that's just for this one bill? $2,200 in additional costs for one high school in the state of Washington? Meanwhile, the governor wants to act like, oh, our Climate Commitment Act isn't doing this to people. It's obviously doing it to people. And at least on the eastern side of the state, those school districts can see it. At least they can see it because their utility providers are writing right on there, Washington Climate Act fee. And in Western Washington, PSC, oh, the Attorney General's office tells the Utilities and Transportation Committee, don't put that on bills. Don't put that on bills. You know, the good thing is, though, and what the Senate Republican caucus is recommending, whether you're a private individual or your school or a business, that you call your provider and you ask them for the itemized charge. Even if they're not putting it on the bill, you ask them, what is the fee for the Climate Commitment Act? And they're going to have to tell you. So I look forward to Republicans gathering all of it, because they've done official formal requests of the school district, who should provide that information to them, even if they're a school district in Seattle, and they don't want Republican state lawmakers to know just how much the CCA is costing. But it's going to turn out to be millions of dollars. So either you care about fully funding our child's education, or you care about forcing schools to pay into a Climate Commitment Act that's really not doing any good. Now, there's another bill that we've talked about before, but I don't think we fully understood, or I fully understood rather, the nexus to school funding here. So remember we talked about the bill currently still alive in Olympia, could very much be sent to the governor's desk, HB 1893, and it would provide unemployment benefits to striking workers. Now, this bill has undergone some iterations and changes. Previously, I think in its first version, those unemployment costs would be completely socialized out to the rest of us. But under this version, it puts the onus, for the most part, on the employer. So if your employees decide to strike because they want better pay or benefits or whatever, you as the employer are essentially still going to have to pay them, which is crazy in and of itself. But I would ask you, let's put our tinfoil caps on, because although I don't think this is a conspiracy, I'm sure the internet will say it is. What's the most powerful union in the state? The Washington Education Association. What do we see? Where do we see a lot of the strikes in our state? School districts. We've seen some pretty lengthy strikes for school districts where I would also note it's not protected under Washington state law. School teachers should not be striking because they don't have the legal protection to do so. But AG Bob Ferguson, Governor Jay Inslee, they don't care. They let that go because they rely on the support of the Washington Education Association. So under this bill, House Bill 1893, if teachers in your kid's school district go on strike, who's paying for that? Who's going to pay for their unemployment benefits and their pay while they're on strike, keeping your kids out of class? You are. The school district is. The individual school district will have to absorb 100% of those costs if teachers go on strike and get paid. Does that sound right to you? You have teachers who often go on strike and say, oh, we're doing it for the kids, while they're keeping kids out of school illegally. We're doing it for the kids. Now they're going to be on strike, getting paid by the school district, regardless of how long, those unemployment benefits. So you're going to pay your teachers to be on strike and keep kids out of class under House Bill 1893. This is the work of the Washington Education Association, not a doubt in my mind. This is the work of the WEA that wants to make sure that teachers can strike, even though it's not even legal to do so. They rely on their political cronies to give them the cover to do that illegally, and then they get to make sure that teachers will get paid the whole time. Do you think this is going to decrease the likelihood that teachers go on strike in this state? Hell no. We're going to see a lot more teacher strikes if HB 1893 becomes law. You can count on it. Coming up next, a comedy club on Capitol Hill is making the rounds on social media among comedians nationally because they have canceled scheduled appearances by four comics. Because those comics jokes just don't meet the ethos of the Capitol Hill neighborhood. We'll discuss in our segment, Unbelievable. First, I've been encouraging you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. Everyone needs insurance. So this is something that is going to be relevant to every single person who is listening. Mike and I, before we became members of the First Mark family, we were out there handling our insurance needs on our own. We were shopping around. We were calling around. We were guessing, I guess, on what coverage would be best for our family, because sometimes that stuff is really complicated to fully understand. And what we wound up with was insurance that cost too much and didn't actually give us the coverage that we needed. So we took the First Mark Challenge. We've been members of the First Mark family a year. And what they do is simple. They schedule some time with you. You can do it virtually or over the phone. They talk to you about your current insurance and your insurance needs. Maybe you need more insurance. Maybe you need a better price. They go out, they shop the market for you for free. They do all of this for free. They come back to you and make recommendations. Dave Taylor is the CEO of First Mark.
I really want to encourage folks, don't try to navigate this current market by yourself. I believe you need to get with a broker. Okay, obviously I'd love them to come to First Mark, but at a minimum they need to be with a broker that works with numerous carriers that can give them the advice they need and really help them navigate this right now because it's complicated.
Yeah, and we've heard so much about people getting their insurance companies just drop them because of some crime issue, or maybe you have a Kia or a Hyundai. If that happens to you, there's no one there to advocate for you. If you were a member of the Firstmark family, you better believe they would be on the phone talking to that insurance carrier, being like, what are you doing to our client? So there's just a lot of benefits to being a member of the Firstmark family. I got a new car the other day, a couple weeks ago, and rather than on hold in some tree, called, like two rings, an actual human lady locally picked up the phone, and we had a nice chat. And then before I knew it, I'd had an email in my inbox saying, everything's taken care of. Love it. FirstmarkInsurance.com. FirstmarkInsurance.com. Don't wait. Become a member of the Firstmark family today. They work for you. All right. The Capitol Hill Comedy Club has canceled shows from some comedians because it just is going to make the activists feel unsafe. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. All right, this takes us to the Capitol Hill Comedy Bar. Probably a place I would never step foot for this exact reason, is I can't imagine the formerly autonomous zone known as Chaz would really allow good comics who are going to tell controversial jokes, which are the very best kind. So four comics were scheduled to make appearances at the Capitol Hill Comedy Bar: Jim Florentine, Luis Gomez, Dave Smith, and Kurt Metzger. That was until activists on Capitol Hill complained about each and every one of them, and Capitol Hill Comedy Bar gave in and canceled their shows, which is getting an awful lot of attention on social media. Jim Florentine, one of the comics who was canceled, said, I guess I need to clean up my act. My comedy shows in Seattle are canceled. And then he tagged the other comedians, and he also shared the email that presumably went out to their bookers saying, hey, we're not going to move forward with these shows. I'm not going to read all of it, but it's pretty funny. It says, this is from the owner of that particular comedy club. After careful consideration and discussion with our team, investors, local comedians, and neighborhood advocacy groups, we've encountered a challenging situation that requires us to revisit the planned shows. Capitol Hill is known for its progressive values, and we've received significant feedback expressing concerns about the alignment of these upcoming shows with the neighborhood's ethos. This feedback includes concerns from local advocacy groups that are deeply embedded in our community and work toward upholding its values. Given the feedback and to avoid any potential negative impact on our club and artists, as well as to maintain the harmony within our community. Yeah, Capitol Hill is a place I really think of harmony. We believe the most responsible course of action is not to move forward with the shows for these comedians, which were going to happen May 31st to June 1st, Jim Florentine September 20th to 21st, Kurt Metzger October 11th through the 12th. This decision was not made lightly. We want to ensure it does not reflect on your talent and the quality of your work, but is instead a reflection of our commitment to our community values. Rob Schneider responded to that. He said, Dear Seattle, if you are worried about hearing ideas separate than your own, if a person standing on a stage saying words that may challenge your opinions frightens you, if you only want approved ideas that keep you in your safe political bubbles, you can thank your local comedy club. And reading that email, it's so ridiculous. We're talking about a comedy show. We're talking about a comedy show, and you're talking about your community's values and ethos. You probably shouldn't operate a comedy club on Capitol Hill then, if that is your concern. Because I will tell you, that particular community is offended by just about everything. So I don't even know how you run a comedy show where people with pink hair don't run out screaming and crying. I'm not familiar with their jokes. I'm not familiar with what it was specifically that was so offensive to a Capitol Hill community and population.
Oh, they're all just maybe right of center. That's
right.
All.
That's
not
the thing.
Even
like, huh?
Not even super right or super conservative necessarily. Yeah. I've heard. I'm just told they're right of center.
Right of center.
But I mean, not
you
everybody knows exactly the breakdown of the city, so I guess that you might not know that going in if you're booking. Oh, Seattle wants to book us. Okay.
I guess maybe Seattle, but maybe not specifically Capitol Hill.
Right.
For comics who might test people's progressive bubble, just poke it a little bit. But I have to laugh at.
Just call Kathy Griffin.
This is how sensitive people are to differing opinions in Seattle.
They're not even coming to the shows. You know that.
No, and that's the thing is like
it being uttered in their
neighborhood. Because you just say don't come, right?
Yeah.
But for him to say community advocacy groups, local comedians push back. Really? I bet you those local comedians who push back aren't very funny. It's just a shot in the dark. But I'm going to guess they're not very funny. Mm-hmm. Investors. It's like, okay, you should not, if this is your approach, I'm telling you right now, move your comedy bar to a different neighborhood in the city. Because there's going to be a very short list of comedians who don't burst the little bubble up on Cap Hill of the commies, and the ones who are left after that probably aren't going to be funny. And these people aren't spending money to come to your bar anyway. Those people who get that easily offended, they don't have disposable income. They're not spending money to come to your comedy shows. They're not going to spend money on drinks and food and stuff at your bar. So just move on. Make a good business decision for yourself.
I like that a few of these, I guess, have been rescheduled in Tacoma for the same date.
Good. Oh, we should go.
We should.
We like should it. Go.
Yeah.
Let's make sure those shows are sold out.
I don't really know these guys, but I'm going to look them up.
If they were canceled by a club on Cap Hill, like, I'm in.
I'm in.
I'm sure they're great. Yeah. Yeah, and Nicole, you're going to work to get one of them on the show, right?
I'm going to try.
Come on, Nicole. You can do it. All right. We're going to skip national news today just because we've got so much happening locally. So I hope you're not uber offended by that. So we'll get to some of your questions and comments coming up next. First, if you are thinking about selling your home at some point this year, I mean, man, it could be in the fall. We're waiting for the Fed to drop interest rates, which will obviously be a better time to put your home on the market. But that can happen really quickly. And you want to be completely ready. If you need cosmetic updates to your home or whatever it is, get the marketing material ready. Reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com as soon as you are even pondering selling your house.
You know, I've turned houses around in a week or two, you know, that were, you know, that were ready. Mm-hmm. And then there's been others that have really taken 6 to 12 months. But, you know, we have a pretty extensive process. There's a lot of work that we do on the front end. Call me as soon as you're thinking about it. No obligation. I think knowledge is power. So the earlier that you can learn, you know, the better off that you're going to be. And if you decide that it's a fit, then we have more time to prep the house and it's a little less stressful.
Yeah, less stress is what you need when you're selling your home. So reach out to a few real estate agents, fine, but don't choose one until you've visited sellwithwes.com and talk to Wes Jones. He's going to give you a free market analysis depending on where you live. He's also going to talk to you about their Listing Boost concierge service where they can come in and handle all these projects and upgrades to your home, and you can just completely sit back and watch them do it. And also you can start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right. Our daily subscriber show poll had to do with, I mentioned earlier on the show, long list of bad bills killed in the Senate Ways and Means Committee. Thank you, Mark Mullett, who's going to be on our show tomorrow. Is Senator Mullett going to be on the show tomorrow? We'll have to give him a little round of applause. But there still are a couple bills, two in particular, that are left that I have my eye on, and I'm just hoping to hear that they are no more, but they haven't died yet. So that's concerning to me. So one of them is that natural gas ban that would prevent new natural gas hookups in new home construction, and then would allow Puget Sound Energy to, they would be relieved of their obligation to continue to serve existing customers, which would really screw you if you're a PSE customer and you rely on natural gas. So there's that one. And then there is the unemployment benefits for striking workers, which I think has a lot of implications. One, it's ridiculous. If you're choosing, you have a job and you're choosing not to work, none of us would get unemployment benefits. If I have a job and if Nicole chooses not to come to work, Nicole's not getting paid, and she wouldn't get unemployment benefits either. If you have a job and you choose not to come, you're going to get fired, and you're not going to be eligible for unemployment benefits. But striking workers who choose not to go to work, their employer is on the hook for that, and for some types of employers, part of that is going to be socialized out to the rest of us. That's ridiculous. So I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon and Locals, of those two, which do you most want to see defeated? The natural gas ban or the pay for striking workers? And most of you are saying the natural gas ban. I think that's because the direct impact to every single household is so much more tangible probably than unemployment benefits for striking workers. Chris says, Brandy, they are both bad. The natural gas ban is the worst of the two. Weisscastle says, easy choice, HB 1589. Which has to do with the gas ban, immediately and thunderously painful and absolutely pointless. Immediately and thunderously painful and absolutely pointless. I like that. HB 1893 would be a boondoggle, but effects would be delayed until a strike occurs. And I think that's a fair point. Joe says, Brandy, why do you have to Sophie's choice us? I choose the unemployment bill because it will have sweeping consequences to the workforce as a whole and the cost of running a business. I just don't believe they will ever ban natural gas. Am I being naive? Yes, Joe. Yes, you are being naive if you think that in the state of Washington, especially if Bob Ferguson becomes governor and they realize we're untouchable, that they won't move ahead with a full-on ban of natural gas. And if you're a PSE customer, which is more than 500,000 people, I mean, the likelihood of them saying, okay, we're not doing any new gas hookups, so down the road, we're not going to continue to serve existing customers if it's not profitable for us, that is a very, very real thing. Jay Kwai? Brandy, the cost to switch millions of houses, stoves, furnaces, hot water heaters would be astronomical. My research is it would cost me $25,000. And I'm only one house out of how many million? And that's the question I want to ask to Democrats. How do you propose people pay for that? How do you propose people pay for that if PSE cuts off their gas and they have gas appliances? Are you going to pay for that? Are taxpayers going to pay for that? No. How do you propose people stay warm when the heat goes out? I'm just dying, by the way, for State Senator Emily Randall to vote in support of a natural gas ban, because the last storm, she posts a picture on social media with her feet cozied up to a gas fireplace, saying she was grateful to have the heat of a gas fireplace because hers went out at home. I'm just dying to see if she votes for this thing, because that picture will be the only thing I ever post on social media from now until the end of time. All right. Let's get to questions and comments. First, I have a shout out to do for our Ultra subscribers. They get a shout out on the show. And Peter Kessling, who became an Ultra subscriber, thank you so much for the support. We absolutely appreciate it. Also sent along a nice note. He said, I've been listening to your podcast since you started. I was an admirer of your work when you were on Fox 13. I don't always agree with you, but I always respect your thoughts and intelligent analysis of issues. Thank you. I'm fiercely independent, he says, to the extent that I refuse to identify with a political party. Washington is a mess because of a one-party system. I could not agree more. Here's the shout-out part. Peter Kessling is the owner of Capital Injury Law. We take your injury personally. Check out our reviews. See, you just have to become an Ultra subscriber for $50 a month. And if you have a business, man, that's a shout out, Capital Injury Law. So Peter Kessling, thank you very much for the support of your show, of our show, but also your show. This is everyone's show. All right, questions and comments. Diane Wade says, or Dean, I'm sorry if I butcher your names. I do it every day. It's not, I'm trying. What will happen if I identify or declare as a Democrat but plan on voting Republican? So you can't do that on this ballot. You've got to check one, and then you've got to choose someone from the list on that side. But you can declare as a Democrat for the presidential primary, and then come November, you can vote for a Republican. There's no limitation there. This is the only time. You just have to choose, because you can't vote in both, so you have to choose which one you're going to vote in. But yeah, you could vote for Joe Biden on this one, turn around and vote for Donald Trump in November. It wouldn't matter at all. That would be weird, and I would question your sanity unless you have some sort of strategy where you're trying to, like, you know, choose like the worst candidate on one side. I don't know. Family Nguyen says, I tossed the ballot out because of that party declaration. Plus, I can't support anyone on that ballot. Deanne Sanderson, yeah, somebody's like, is Brandy going to choose Nikki Haley because she hates Trump? I haven't decided if I'm going to fill it out. I am a religious voter, but I do not like the idea of having to declare a party. You know me, I'm nothing if not fiercely independent, and I don't want all that crap in the mail. Let's see. Deanne Sanderson, based on the ballot, I guess folks who want RFK Jr. can only vote write-in. What party? He's not my guy, but I think he should be on the ballot. CP says, I do not want mailers from any party. I think it is inappropriate to ask and require the declaration, especially on the outside of the envelope. Jailbreak Vicky says, Vicky, do you have something to tell us? Like, are you on the run from justice? Jailbreak Vicky, the reason I didn't check a box, I didn't want my ballot lost. My Trump vote probably won't be counted now. Yeah, I think you do have to check a box. It's required. It's required. All right, Boo Boo Bear with a $5 super chat. No comment, just money. Thanks, Boo Boo Bear. Or unless, is there, okay.
Nope.
On the strike bill, Lancelot Dufresne says, I've been on strike. The loss of wages is part of the incentive for both sides to negotiate. Paid strike is insane, let alone on my dime at the sake of children. And that's such a good point.
It's incentive for the employer to just agree to their demands.
And that's what Democrats want.
That's what it's about.
Right. We're going to pay you anyway, so I guess we'll just agree to your demands to get you back into the office.
Because we're losing every day.
And then this is going to be for striking workers. This is a brainchild of the WEA. They want teachers to be able to go on strike, even though they're already very high paid in our state compared to other places nationally. They're going to say, this is for the children. It's not for the children. It's never been for the children. All right, on the comedy shows that have been canceled, and we'll let you guys know. Like, maybe we can figure out, maybe it can be like a date, like an undivided, you know, hey, we're going to go to this comedy show if you guys want to also buy tickets. We're not going to buy your tickets for you because we don't have that kind of money. But
we can all meet up.
But we could all meet up, you know. Sharon says, I hope the comedy club realizes they put a gigantic bullseye on them for all the comics to target and bag on now. And that is the thing, too, is it hurts your reputation as a comedy club. You're just going to have people who are like, I don't want to book this show. I have this tight schedule. And then have you cancel? That's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Country guy. So murder and arson of an occupied building is more in concert with the neighborhood's ethos. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Which is such a good point. Like, we can't have people come tell jokes because it's not in line with the neighborhood's ethos. But yeah, armed left-wing activists who want to take over a police precinct and like try to kill cops and light it on fire.
It's more our style.
I mean, that's honest, right?
Right.
It's more our style.
I know. I do think that they do this because the activists come across as so scary. Yep. But I think that the loss of revenue will be scarier in the long run.
Well, yeah.
Because they don't spend money. Activists don't spend money.
No, they don't have money.
No.
No, their budget for their pistachio frap latte soy milk goat milk thing is, that's the only thing they splurge on. I don't know.
I don't know.
Cow milk is completely out.
Absolutely.
Wasn't there some lawsuit like you can't call almond milk because it's not milk? Like you have to call it like almond beverage, almond flavored beverage or something.
I don't know if that went anywhere. I think that was a thing. I don't know if that
went anywhere. Noel Pauly with a $19.99 super chat. Thank you. Are we able to listen to the hearings virtually? Love you both. Hope to meet you someday in person. Noel from Bellingham. Yes. Noel, will you put your email in the live chat here before the end of the show? And Nicole and I will email you a link. But you can go on TVW and just say live or even upcoming videos, and it'll mark it like this is a live hearing coming up. So you just look for the one and then you click on it and you can watch it live on TVW. But we can shoot you over a link if you can't find it, if you can get your email in the comments before we end.
Or I'll just put the link to the TVW in the comments right now.
All right. Okay, we'll do that. Linda says, doesn't the marking of your choice between Democrats or Republicans dictate how many delegates are given to that party? Also, it's my understanding that if you don't check either, that the SOS will send you a notice to cure the ballot within a period of given time. Yeah, because you have an issue with the ballot. Similar if they don't think your signature matches or something like that, they'll give you an opportunity to cure the ballot for it to still count. But yes, so what you're trying to do in this is you're choosing the party's nominee. So in that sense, it does make sense. It's like, this is a party process. It's not a government process. The Democratic Party and the Republican Party are holding a process to decide who their party nominee is going to be. So they want people voting who are a member of their party. And that's what that declaration is all about. Okay, good questions and comments. Per the usual, we've got a graphic sanity check for you today. Nicole has a big warning, graphic. So I'm going to give you a warning. If you're watching the show, an image we're going to show you in the sanity check is pretty freaking gross. So you might not want to watch. With that, our closing sanity check. All right, another attack on public transit in the Seattle area. A 26-year-old man was shot to death inside a light rail train on Sunday night. And again, graphic. Our friend Jonathan Cho put out exclusive pictures of the aftermath of that attack. Cops say it happened between Pioneer Square and University Street stations. So on the train, while it's captive underground, the shooting happened. Shooter is still on the loose. And that shooting accounts for the 9th homicide of the year in Seattle. Now, of course, we have talked about violence on public transit quite a bit. There's a lot of public safety issues on our transit system, whether it's buses or light rail. You know, the drug use is an issue. I can't even imagine wanting to be a bus driver, with especially in the downtown Seattle core, with everything that goes on. The Seattle Times did report on this homicide, and they expanded on some of the acts of violence that have happened. It says King County Metro buses have also been the site of deadly violence, most recently in October when someone was fatally shot on board the H line in White Center, making it the fourth shooting since 2019 inside a Metro bus or at a transit station. Another rider was fatally stabbed aboard a bus in SeaTac. In September, an unprovoked provoked Tamara Tack left two people injured at a Sound Transit Beacon Hill station. In 2023, there was also an unprovoked knife attack on a train near Othello station, during which fellow passengers rescued the victim. A man struck in the head by a large rock at a Soto station, a stabbing during a fight at the Angle Lake station, and a stabbing on the platform of the International District Chinatown station after a fight that began inside a train. All of that, and Democrats want to make it illegal for you to carry a weapon to protect yourself on public transit. Not a chance in hell. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. Remember, if you have not signed up to support our show already, we could use your support in this important election year. It's just $5 a month. You can sign up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. You get to participate in our daily subscriber show polls, our monthly live Q&As with yours truly, and also you get access to our exclusive show Sundays with subscribers. And while you're there, don't forget to shop our merch store, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. See you back tomorrow on the live show. Boop.